Chapter 16, Sarah.
When whippoorwill calls and evening is nigh, I hurry to my blue heaven. I turn to the right, a little white light will lead you to my
People saw Sarah as a stunning, charming, smart, sweet young woman. What they did not know was that she was a frightened, insecure girl with no self-confidence at all. Several men came to Miss Pearl's parlor just to see Sarah, and some told her they loved her. In just 6 months, she had had 3 marriage proposals. Something about her sad aloofness made men want to rescue her. Although she was friendly enough, Sarah was a prisoner in the darkness of her mind. This is Sarah's story. Sarah had never known her father, and her mother, a sweet, kind woman named Beth, hardly spoke of him. She only knew that she was conceived one night under a blanket of bright Texas stars in the most magical evening of her mother's life. When Beth's father learned she was pregnant at 16, he disowned her and threw her out of the house. Beth knew a girl who had become pregnant and moved to Oklahoma. There, she joined her friend and took refuge in a home for unwed mothers. When Beth first saw her baby girl, she fell instantly in love.
How do you do, little one? My name is Beth, and I am your mother. I am going to call you Sarah, because it means princess. You are my little princess, sweet Sarah.
Beth could not bear the thought of giving up her new baby for adoption and prayed for a miracle. In a church where Sarah went asking for help, an elderly couple named Anderson took on both mother and child. Because the Andersons had lost a daughter to scarlet fever when she was only 2 years old, Sarah brought joy back to the Anderson household. In addition, Beth cooked and cleaned for them for several years. One morning, as Mr. Anderson was coming back into the house after picking up the morning paper, Beth saw him grab his chest and fall. By the time she got to him, Mr. Anderson had passed away. One of the policemen who arrived on the scene was a man named Stanley Bebben. Everyone on the force called him Stan the Man. Stan attended Mr. Anderson's funeral mainly to see Beth again. That afternoon, when they returned to the house and all of the friends paid their respects, Mrs. Anderson went to Beth with a heavy heart.
I'm going to live with my sister in San Antonio, Beth.
During the next several weeks, Beth and Sarah helped Mrs. Anderson put her life in order and packed what she wanted to keep. Everything else was sold, including the house. During that time, Stan stopped by when patrolling the neighborhood and took Beth on a couple of dates. One night, Stan took Beth to dinner and presented her with a simple golden ring.
Please marry me. I've been so lonely since my wife died.
With Mr. Anderson's death, life as they knew it had changed. Beth realized that she and Sarah had nowhere to go. Although Stan, with his round pot-belly stomach, was not what anyone would consider an attractive man, he seemed nice enough. Beth had no job, and she had to think about what was best for Sarah. The next week, Beth married Stan at the courthouse, and she and Sarah moved into his 2-bedroom apartment. At first, their new life seemed good enough. Beth got a job as a waitress, and Stan worked the night shift, so Sarah didn't see him too much. One night she heard him screaming at her mother and slapping her around.
Stop!
Sarah ran out of her room and found her mother on the floor,
Stan,
in a fetal position, Stan
like
flaying
that,
and
bitch.
Kicking at her. Stan looked at Sarah with crazy yellow eyes. She hardly recognized him.
Go to bed!
The screaming had stopped, but Sarah never forgot the look on her mother's face as she was pleading with Stan to stop kicking her. Stan was a binge drinker. The drinking always set him off, making the abuse unpredictable. Beth and Sarah never knew why or when Stan might start drinking, but when he did, he transformed into a monster like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. The worst part was the next day, he had no memory of the horrible things he had done the night before. When he saw the damage he had done to the house or to Beth's face, he broke down and bawled like a baby.
"I'm so sorry, Beth. Please forgive me. Don't leave me. Beth, it'll never happen again. I swear."
Over the next few years, Sarah became frightened and confused as she witnessed the sporadic episodes of abuse. One night, when Sarah was spending the night with a friend, Beth was hurt so badly she had to be admitted to the emergency room. Stan had kicked her in the stomach, broken her nose, and had put his gun to her head, telling her he was going to kill her and then kill himself. The next day, he brought her flowers and cried again.
"Don't leave me, Beth! I love you so much! Beth, I'll get help! I promise!"
Stan told everyone Beth had fallen down a flight of steps, and she went along with his story. Sarah knew better.
"He's a cop, Sarah. They won't believe me over him. It's just better this way. Anyway, he says this time he's really going to get some help."
"But Mama, he hurt you."
Sometimes months went by without an incident, and life for Beth and Sarah were at least bearable. Some of his buddies on the force kept some confiscated cases of bootlegged whiskey for their own pleasure. When this happened, Stan usually went on drinking binges, and all hell broke loose. When Sarah was 16, she came home from school one day and found Stan sitting in his chair. Her mother was at work. Stan had been drinking, and now he had a new victim, the booze transforming him into a monster.
"If you don't do what I say, I'll kill your kitty."
Sarah had never been so frightened. She did every horrible thing he told her, all making her sick to her stomach.
"Good girl. Now don't tell anyone or you'll find Kitty hanging from the shower rod one day when you go to take your bath."
Sarah ran to the bathroom and threw up. After that, Sarah did all she could to avoid being alone with Stan. Finally, Sarah went home one morning after a sleepover and found her mother at the kitchen table holding a towel over her face, her eye reddish purple and swollen shut. Holding ice on it to ease the pain and reduce the swelling, she also had an ugly cut on her mouth. Beth was gently petting Kitty on her lap with her other hand. There was an eerie darkness in the quiet, as if a cloud of evil lingered over the apartment. Warm, salty tears were rolling down Beth's face.
"I'm sorry, baby. I'm so sorry."
"What's happened, Mama? Where's Stan?"
"I think I killed him, Sarah. He came home drunk and started calling me horrible names and saying awful things about you. I knew what was coming and tried to reason with him. Then he came after me and pushed me down. I decided to fight back, honey. When I did, he laughed, pushed me down again, and kicked me again and again. He kept kicking me, Sarah. I think I have some broken ribs."
Beth's mother was wearing a yellow robe. She opened it up and showed Sarah a yellowish patch of skin on her side with splotches of green and dark purple.
"Finally, he put his hands around my throat. I couldn't breathe. I quit fighting and went limp. That probably saved my life because when I did, he stopped. He said nasty things about you, baby. Nasty, horrible things."
"I'm so sorry, Sarah. I'm so sorry. I had no
Beth fell over in the chair holding on to her heart.
When he passed out in the bed, I hit him with my big iron skillet from the stove. I couldn't stop. I wanted the ugly to go away. I don't know how many times I hit him, Sarah. When I finally quit, blood was all over the pillow. He wasn't moving, and he wasn't breathing.
Oh, Mama! What are we going to do?
I don't know, Sarah. I don't know. He's a cop, for God's sakes. I don't know. They're going to hang me for sure.
Sarah washed the blood from the frying pan with bleach and put it in the cupboard.
Mama, I'm going to call the police and tell them you need an ambulance. We'll tell them that Stan hurt you. It'll be all right. Don't worry, Mama. It'll be all right.
Beth's voice became unusually calm.
That's a good girl, Sarah. Call the police. That's a good girl. This is the address and phone number of your grandparents in Texas. There's money in a red box on the top of the bookshelf in the living room. Everything is going to be okay, baby. Now, come give your mama a kiss.
Sarah's mother got up slowly from the table and shuffled to the bedroom where Stan was laying on the bed and shut the door.
Operator, I need the police, please. There's been an accident and my mama's hurt bad. Our address is 522 Grapevine Avenue.
The shot came from the bedroom, sending a chill running down Sarah's spine.
Mama!
She dropped the phone, screaming. Sarah found her mother slumped in a chair with a wound to her head. Stan's gun was lying on the floor beside her.
Mama! No, Mama!
The police found Sarah with her head on her mother's lap, sobbing profusely, and with Kitty lying beside her. From her deep sadness, Sarah could hear the police.
Oh, shit. What a mess. Yeah, it's Stan the man, all right. What's left of him? Damn. He surely pissed somebody off.
Next, Sarah found herself sitting on the sofa in the living room with Kitty on her lap. A neighbor lady had come over to console her.
You'll stay with me tonight, Sarah. The police have located your grandparents in Henderson, Texas.
Sarah's grandmother, a timid woman, was waiting at the train station when she arrived. Sarah thought she looked like an older version of her mother. She was happy to see Sarah.
Such a pretty girl. You look just like Beth did when she left home. Oh.
Sarah's grandmother began crying and pulled a handkerchief from her purse.
Oh, my poor little Beth. My poor, poor little Bethy Ann. How I wish I could tell her how much I loved her. I loved her so much. I cried for months when her father sent her away. I begged him not to, but he was so angry. Such a stubborn man. Oh, my poor Bethy.
Sarah called her grandparents grandmother and grandfather. Although her grandfather barely spoke to her, her grandmother tried her best to make up for the indifference her husband showed. The next week, Sarah started her senior year of school in Texas, yet no one knew her story. She kept to herself most of the time and avoided talking to boys at all because her grandfather didn't let her date.
You're going to turn out just like your mother if you start seeing boys. Everyone's gone crazy with that new jazz music and dancing all around. Women making themselves up like clowns. Heathens, all heathens.
Sarah, the gorgeous new girl in town that everyone talked about, had all the boys' attention which certainly made it hard for her to make friends with the girls. Sarah had never felt so alone. She missed her mother, and most nights she cried herself to sleep. One girl, Maggie, was nice to Sarah. Maggie wasn't popular with the girls either. However, the boys loved her because she was cute, friendly, and funny. The girls called her a tramp. Life at school became better the day Maggie saw Sarah eating lunch alone and sat across the table from her.
Hi, I'm Maggie. You're new here, aren't you? Tell me about yourself.
Sarah was startled. It was the first friendly conversation she had since the day she started school. The last thing she wanted to do was to tell anyone about herself.
I live with my grandparents, and I have a cat I call Kitty.
Is that it?
That's it.
Well, alrighty then.
Maggie smiled and Sarah smiled back. They spent the rest of their lunch talking about how their history teacher needed to learn to not talk through his nose and how great it would be if women could wear trousers like men. Maggie put her head down and whispered,
Hey, look over there. Michael Collins is looking at you.
Michael Collins, a handsome athlete, was the absolute bee's knees, according to the other girls. They all wanted to date Michael Collins, and he knew it. He carried a supply of condoms with him because his mission was to experience as many girls as he could before he graduated from school.
You've got to be careful of that one. He's only after one thing.
Aren't they all?
Let's have lunch again tomorrow, Sarah. Somehow I feel we are going to be friends for a long time.
From that day on, Maggie and Sarah ate lunch together despite unpleasant looks from the other girls. Sarah had a difficult time warming up to boys. The emotional damage from her stepfather's abuse had resulted in horrible nightmares that would wake her up in the middle of the night. Although she liked Maggie, she did not want anyone to know her story. But she did not realize that Maggie had a story of her own. Sarah's grandfather was exceedingly strict with the time she left and came home. As far as she was concerned, she wanted to get through the school year and graduate. Her grandmother was a sweetheart and was quietly apologetic, but it was clear her grandfather ruled the household. Living with him was like walking on thin ice. He was aloof and hardly spoke to Sarah.
You're a spawn from bad seed.
Michael Collins had his eye on Sarah. Despite Maggie's warnings, Sarah felt special to know he was interested. He thought himself quite the stud. The girls he slept with never admitted to anyone that they had been with him for fear of ruining their reputations. Michael Collins, always the charmer, said and did whatever it took for a girl to say yes to his advances. The girls who had sex with him were not aware that Michael did, in fact, kiss and tell his close buddies. He had a collection of undergarments and showed off every one of them. Sometimes his friends presented him challenges. Sarah was the new challenge. Michael decided early on that Sarah was going to be difficult, though he tried all his tricks. He used his best lines, but none worked. He began to doubt himself. Sarah barely spoke to him and avoided any eye contact, frustrating him because Michael knew his strongest assets were his clear, blue, puppy dog bedroom eyes, outlined by his long, dark eyelashes. Dang, what was up with her? Sarah enjoyed Michael's advances, but she knew that if she broke her grandfather's rules, she would be out on the streets. Maggie found it all amusing. She had never been enough of a challenge for the great Michael Collins to be interested in her. He knew Maggie was a sure thing and often teased her about it.
You haven't lived until you've been with the great Michael Collins, Miss Maggie.
Maggie put her hand over her brow in a dramatic gesture.
I guess I'll go to my grave pining my loss and wondering. Ha, ha.
The truth be known, Michael was too conceited for Maggie to want to be with him. She preferred the boys who appreciated her for herself. However, she did enjoy the teasing, which ultimately made them friends. Michael was persistent, and Sarah let down her guard.
Be careful, Sarah. He can be a heartbreaker.
Sarah enjoyed the attention and the fact that the girls who didn't like her liked him. Finally, Sarah agreed to meet him for ice cream after school one day. He put on his best game, and she found herself swept away with Michael's charms. Those bedroom eyes were so alluring that she realized she enjoyed the attention. For weeks, they met after school for ice cream and walks in the park. Sarah made her grandfather's restrictions clear. For example, Sarah had to be home by 5 every afternoon. Their relationship was perfect. Sarah, a good listener, was quiet, and he liked to talk, especially about himself. Michael found himself looking forward to their time together. He even stopped talking about himself so much and became more interested in learning more about Sarah. Michael could make Sarah laugh, and she loved gazing into his beautiful blue eyes. Their relationship became a soulful connection neither of them had ever known. He had not even held her hand, yet she felt a deep, mysterious connection with him. His friends continued to ask him if he had scored with Sarah. Michael was, after all, their woman-getter hero, the one who always got the girl. As Michael had become more and more enchanted with Sarah, his original intentions completely disappeared. He wanted to be with her, but no longer saw Sarah as a challenge. She had his heart, and he was not ashamed to let his friends know.
Sarah's different. I really think I love her. No more asking.
His friends understood. With graduation 2 weeks away, Sarah and Michael sat on a bench by the football field, and he asked,
Sarah, will you go study with me?
Yes. Yes, I will.
Sarah hugged on his neck. When they touched, both of them felt a powerful surge. Michael gave Sarah a golden locket.
Read the inscription on the back.
Michael loves Sarah forever. Oh, Michael, it's beautiful.
Sarah was happier than she had ever been. She thought about her mother and wished she was able to show her the locket and tell her about Michael Collins. Even though her grandfather stayed home, her grandmother attended her graduation. Sarah was so happy. Michael and Sarah attended the big party at the community center together to celebrate their graduation. Michael, the most handsome boy in school, and Sarah, officially his girlfriend, danced and held hands all night long. That night, on a blanket beneath the Texas stars, Michael and Sarah made love.
I love you, Sarah. I really love you.
I love you too, Michael, with all my heart.
When Michael took Sarah home, it was almost midnight. As they approached the house holding hands, they saw Sarah's grandfather sitting on a chair waiting for her on the porch.
Don't worry. I've got you.
You're just like your mother, you heathen child. You're a spawn from bad seed.
I have been at my graduation party, Grandfather. This is Michael. He brought me home.
The young couple walked up on the porch. Michael reached out his hand.
How do you do, sir? My name is Michael Collins.
He had never met anyone so dark and sinister. Sarah's grandfather's pupils were like dark beads, darting back and forth in his yellowing eyes. His voice low and gravelly, like a demon speaking from the pits of hell. Sarah's grandfather, taking a pistol from under the blanket on his lap, aimed at Sarah's chest. He looked insane.
You are bad seed. It's time you burn in the fires of hell where you belong.
Michael jumped forward.
No!
Sarah had heard that sound before. It was the second time she heard a fatal blast that had sent a cold chill down her spine. Her beloved Michael, who just an hour before had made love to her, was lying on his stomach on the ground. The sound of the shot that killed Michael was even more devastating than the one that had taken her mother. Both would forever be permanent memories. It was 1 o'clock in the morning when the sheriff took Sarah's grandfather away. She could not speak for weeks. Sarah just sat in her room, stroking Kitty, looking out the window. She never took off her locket. It lay over her broken heart like a medal of valor. Maggie, her wonderful friend, visited Sarah every day. Sometimes they cried together, and Maggie hugged her friend, rocking her like a baby. She could feel the pain deep inside Sarah's heart. Many days she had to force her to eat.
I don't want to eat. I don't even want to live, Maggie. I want to be with Mama and Michael.
This worried Maggie, and from that moment on, she never left Sarah's side. A few months after he had been arrested, Sarah's grandfather had a heart attack and died in prison. Her grandmother wandered around in a daze most of the time. Beth's older sister, Catherine, Sarah's aunt, came to the house to take care of her grandmother. Catherine had run away when she was 16 and had not seen her mother since. Sarah's grandfather, who had been horribly abusive to both of his girls, locked them in dark closets and made them do things too evil to speak about. When Catherine had left home, she hooked up with a man who had taken her to San Angelo, Texas, but after a few weeks, he got on a train and hasn't been seen since. In San Angelo, Catherine, known as Miss Kitty, learned how to survive by working in a house full of women who made a living being nice to men.
After all the hell we had as children, every day away from that old bastard was just like heaven.
Catherine spent that summer in Henderson. Everyone, including the doctors, knew grandmother wasn't going to live long. Sarah fell in love with her Aunt Catherine. Catherine's upbeat attitude and smile brought them close.
Sarah, you remind me so much of Bethy Ann. You even laugh like her.
In September, Sarah's grandmother passed away. Catherine was somber.
Mama's finally at peace. Only the good Lord knows what the hell that man put her through.
The day after the funeral, Catherine, Maggie, and Sarah went up into the attic and found a trunk full of memories that her grandmother had saved over the years. It was like finding a hidden treasure. Clothes, old toys, a couple of dolls, and some old photographs.
I thought my doll was gone forever when that old bastard took it away. Mama must have hidden it. Look, this one was your mother's.
Aunt Catherine handed the doll to Sarah.
Look here, Sarah. This was me before I ran away.
Maggie was looking over her shoulder.
May I see? What a funny hat.
Here's Bethy when she was a baby.
Sarah looked at the photograph for a long time. Tears rolled down her face.
She's so cute. Why would anyone want to hurt her, Aunt Catherine? Hurt both of you. I don't understand.
I don't know, Sarah. I guess we'll never know. Why don't you come back with me to San Angelo? I have a house close to the river that one of my gentleman friends bought for me. You can bring Kitty. Yeah, bring Kitty to Miss Kitty's. I'm going to sell everything here. There are hundreds of reasons I never want to see this place again.
A few weeks later, Catherine and Sarah were on their way to San Angelo.
Come visit me, Maggie. Come visit me soon.
Sarah moved to San Angelo, Texas with her Aunt Catherine in the fall of 1922. Catherine had maintained a select few clients over the years, including the man who had bought her house. Sarah took walks along the Concho River when her aunt was entertaining. Maggie was worried about Sarah. That November, she decided to visit her in San Angelo. When Sarah saw her at the train station, she realized how much she had missed her and was grateful to have such a loyal friend.
How long can you stay, Maggie?
As long as it takes, Sarah.
It was a crisp, cool afternoon, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Get yourself ready, Maggie. We're going out.
Where are we going?
We're going to visit the orphanage. Aunt Catherine visits the children every week. She takes them money and plays games with them. I like to go with her. Aunt Catherine is so much fun, and the children love her.
Catherine heard the girls talking and stood at the doorway of Sarah's room. She shared a secret with them not many people knew.
When I was very young, I had a baby. I wasn't able to take care of him. One evening, I left him on the doorstep of some nice people I knew that were not able to have children. I threw a rock at the door and watched from behind a bush as they brought him into the house. Soon afterwards, I began working at Miss Hattie's. He doesn't know me, but I know him. I've secretly watched him grow up. He's so handsome and has a little boy of his own. I'm a grandmother.
That's so sad.
His name is Joshua. That's what the note in my basket read when I gave him away. I named him after my mother's father. He was so kind. Nothing like our father. I like to visit the orphanage. It helps fill the hole in my heart. Some of the children who live there were born in local bordellos. Be careful now. The little Dickens will steal your heart away. Right, Sarah?
That's true. I always look forward to visiting the children.
Sometimes I wish I could bring them all home with me.
As Maggie, Sarah, and Aunt Catherine approached the orphanage, they met a woman carrying a basket of different colored balls of yarn.
Good morning, my friend. What do you have in the basket?
The woman picked up a red ball of yarn. I thought today I would teach the little girls how to make yarn dolls. My mother taught me how to make them when I was a little girl, and I remember playing with them for hours. Usually, I bring storybooks and read to the children. I thought I would do something different today. And who do we have here?
This is my niece, Sarah, and her friend, Maggie. Girls, I'd like you to meet my good friend, Miss Victoria Pearl.
When whippoorwill calls and evening is nigh, I hurry to my blue heaven. I turn to the right, a little white light will lead you to mine.